call this meeting of the Houghton Community Council to order. Can we have a roll call, please?
Elsie Weber?
Here.
Kathleen McMonagle?
Here.
Rick Whitney?
Here.
Rick Engel?
Here.
Bill Goggins?
Here.
John Kaplan?
Here.
Okay. First item is the reading and approval of minutes. Would anybody like to move to dispense with the reading of the minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Does anybody have any additions or corrections to the minutes?
No, I don't.
Going once. Oh, okay. Paul?
Uh-oh.
Yeah? Okay.
His name is spelled wrong.
Eric Shields. I before E, except after C, right? That's the old rule.
Uh-oh.
Well, on occasion we spelled it correct.
Oh, I didn't.
I didn't have any problem with the content of the minutes. So would somebody like to move that we approve the minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Our agenda for tonight includes council member reports and comments. We have an opportunity for the audience to speak to us for a few minutes. And we have a hearing on the miscellaneous zoning code amendments, kind of a courtesy hearing on zoning code amendments, followed by work program review and administrative reports and community council discussion, particularly with our calendars. And that is our agenda for tonight. So we have, actually, I think I'll start out on the council member reports and comments by making the announcement that we have chosen a replacement for Hugh Givens to the council, and since she's present, I want to congratulate Laura for being elected to the council, and you will be able to sit with us at the next meeting. You've got to be sworn in, I think, to make it official. So congratulations. Other council member reports and comments. Anybody have anything?
I will give the obligatory. Kirkland has a 4th of July parade every year.
Oh, yes.
And the city and Houghton always tries to enter a float, and once again we're going to try to enter a float, and we would love to have input and help and ideas and good ideas and so whatever. I think that the next Central Houghton Neighborhood Association meeting, which will be the first Wednesday of April, the agenda, I believe, will be about discussing float ideas for the 4th of July. So if you have any ideas, if you want to participate, I encourage you, your families, anybody, to get involved with us, because that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for kids. We like to have the teenagers, the young kids, the elders, everybody walk with us in the parade if possible. We're not afraid of hard work. We just need a good idea. So,
what's the theme for this year's parade?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Penny. I think her group comes up with that, so I don't know.
We should get that before we come up with a float idea, right?
Every year we try to come up with it, but typically they don't have that till after we need to get going on the float. So.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
What was last year's float?
Last year's float we did Houghton Walks,
yeah,
Rain or
walking,
Shine,
yeah.
And it was a giant pedestrian walking guy that moved, and he walked, and then we had everybody else dressed in raincoats, and we walked beside the float. And it's cute.
Yes.
Little kids in raincoats. We didn't win.
I could see why.
So that's why I'm begging.
It was a little confusing.
It was a little confusing.
People were wondering, what the heck is that?
And it was like two-dimensional of an idea for a three-dimensional float. You know, it needed a third dimension. So.
Well, you had Hammering Man.
He was just like Hammering Man, only he was walking man.
Okay, so let's try to come up with ideas and be participating in that. What about Hugh's party, Elsie? Do you want to?
Oh, you all have your invitations, and John and I have been working real hard, and we've got it together. It's a definite date; it can't be changed. Money's already been put down on it, and Those invitations include your husband, wife, or significant other.
Okay.
What about the insignificant other?
Well, you could bring that person here.
Oh, we're going to have fun with that.
What day of the week is that?
Huh?
What day of the week
Thursday.
Is
that? Thursday. That's a Thursday.
It's a Thursday.
Okay.
6 to 8.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it says.
6 to 8.
6 p.m. to 8 p.m.?
Oh, I thought you said the 16th. It's on the 12th.
Okay.
Oh, no.
I was
like, it says 6 p.m. 6
p.m. until 8. Trying to figure not everybody will be able probably to get... Everybody works, guys. And that way it gives you a chance to come in a little bit later. And
maybe you're gonna
if you have to.
Okay. So is there anybody that has a conflict with that? Or we're...
If you do, I can't change it. So
I'm going to try to.
Well, it'd be nice to know that we're going to have full participation. I want to bring up one thing that Hugh had suggested to me, and that is he feels with the new members coming on the council that it would be a good time for us to review with our council the legalities of the actions we take, and having Carol do that. And apparently Carol has been trying to plan something with the Bellevue Community Council, and so there's an opportunity to do it together with them, and it would be more efficient and more cost effective. And I'm not sure, Paul, what the process is to make that happen, but it seems like a good idea. We haven't had that for quite a while.
That's a good idea.
And especially with new members. So is there anybody that doesn't think it would be a good idea to do that? Okay. So, Paul, what's the process?
I could put the wheels in motion or check in on that and find out what the next step would be. But I think you've done that before, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've got contact information for Carol. And so just let me know what involvement we have to have. And
does she have a date for Bellevue?
I'll call her and find out if she has. At this point, I think it was just they want to do it, but they don't have a date set. So, okay, so we'll go forward with that, and I think that's.
And then I wanted to ask a question.
Sure. Okay.
There was some discussion on the FARs, the floor area ratio, that came out of the city council meeting that was at the Houghton Fire Station. And so I wanted to know if we could get a report from the city on what is allowed in Houghton due to FARs that's not allowed in the rest of the city, and what's the impact of that then? Because Houghton doesn't have the FAR. That's not part of the zoning here.
What I could give you is a copy of the ordinance that was adopted by the city council that shows what's applicable to the rest of the city but does not apply in Houghton, so I can get that sent to you.
Paul, one other thing that might be of interest. I know that back the first go-around that Hugh and Dan went and kind of toured homes that were under the FAR and trying to determine how much of a change it would be if we adopted it, and they concluded that it wasn't going to really make any change. And so do you have any examples of homes that have been built in Houghton that wouldn't be able to be built the way that they are, that, you know, how they would be different if they had to be built under the FAR regulations?
You know, not off the top of my head. We'd have to go and pull permits and do the calculations, and it would be a bit of an effort, but we can maybe do a little bit of checking.
I think that we recently went through this discussion again, and I think we talked about it, and there was that one house that everyone was calling attention to that was on 105th, over by your house, Elsie, the one across from you.
Yeah.
And it seemed like...
We did some research on that, I think.
I think even that one, I think maybe could have been built under FAR. Or something, but
I don't recall for sure.
I
have a good example.
Yeah, all those pictures and everything were taken.
The house next to you.
10619 Northeast 46.
That's a new house, and you wanted to know what the FAR for that house would be.
The architect told me that under FARs it couldn't have been built.
10619 He said it
couldn't have been built.
So that doesn't have to be something right away, but in the next few months, if we could get that information?
So just to be clear, what exactly are you looking for, Kathleen? I mean, for us to pull permits or to look at some examples or?
Yes, to get my understanding from comments from the city council is that there was houses built recently in Houghton that could not have been built in the rest of Kirkland. So first of all, is that true? And then are there like three examples, you know, what would have had to have been changed? So I'm not looking for an exhaustive one, but, sure. You know, just an idea. So.
Did somebody ask you about this, Kathleen?
Yeah. No, I thought of it all by myself. No, first I heard about it from the city council meeting, then was asked.
Okay. Does that give you enough direction, Paul?
I think so, sure.
Okay.
You got one of the addresses right there, and then the other address I would say would be to look at that one that's on 105th and 60th.
Northeast 65th Place and 105th. Right across the street from my house.
Right across the street from Monsi's house. That doesn't look like a... it doesn't look like it should have been allowed. I don't think FAR would have allowed that, but I know we had that discussion. Because it doesn't have any, like, curvies and angles and all of that. It's just a big block, and it comes all the way out to all of the...
Setbacks.
All the setbacks, I think. Very large.
Okay.
That was all.
Okay. We can't provide you with the ordinance right away. So that.
Oh yeah. No.
So
that's fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Paul, a big giveaway for you on that is if they have a 3-car garage, that's probably going to be the biggest trigger.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, this one has a 4-car garage.
Yeah, even
Paul,
bigger.
Paul, Betsy and I both submitted pictures. I think it was to Mike. It's all together. Mike Berkston, I know he's not here anymore, but I don't know what happens when someone makes a report like that.
Well, I think that's the same one you were talking about, right?
Right.
That should be the
pictures. We took pictures and brought them down here. Betsy and I did of the houses that we thought were could possibly be questionable.
Right. So I think that should still be in the file if we have them.
Yeah, I would think so. So you wouldn't have to do too much if you could just.
Right.
Have somebody find that little file.
And if you come across one, email me or us, and if you have an address in mind, so we can pick a third one or a fourth one or something.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Actually, I did think of one other thing. Elsie provided me with a memo on the legal liability of a smug little look of hers of us as council members and what should happen if we get in a lawsuit situation. And actually we had Carol Morris, before I was on the council, provided a written opinion on this that actually is kind of scary when you read the written opinion. So I don't know if all of you who were on the council at that time remember this, but probably wouldn't be a bad idea for me to copy and distribute this, get this copy and distribute it so everybody knows, and then we can maybe talk about in the future what, if anything, we might want to do to...
Yeah, we should go into executive to talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, and that might be something to talk with Carol at our
training.
Exactly.
Too.
That would... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, just thought I'd throw that out there as well.
Well, we can copy that, put it in your packet if you want.
Pardon?
It'd be
we
great.
Can copy it for you and put it in your next packet if you like.
That's a great... Yeah, that would be great. Thanks, Paul. So with that, we move on to requests from the audience. Would anybody from the audience like to have 3 minutes to speak to the council on any topic? Going once.
Except for the hearing.
Going twice. Sold. Okay. On to the hearing. Paul, do you want to...
Well, Janice Soloff is the project manager on this, and she's here to give you a short presentation and get your comments, questions, and direction.
All right.
Well, Gloria, can you turn on the screen for me, please?
Is the
Uh-oh.
Projector.
Projector, yes.
I'm sorry. Projector.
No pictures. Jump up. Jump up.
It's like my grocery. That's all the way up or all the way down.
Down.
There's no in between.
What?
Oh, I was opening mine just this far for our cat.
Yeah, you're right. Nice big whiteboard.
One morning I went out and it would only open that far.
Uh-oh.
And I said, what's this? And it would close that.
The red light's on, is it?
I thought maybe I had done
good.
Something.
Go ahead and talk.
While they're come to order.
Planning staff is I'm Janice Soloff with the Kirkland Planning Department, and staff is working on revising the format of the design regulations and the zoning code, and that's Chapter 92. And those regulations govern a design review zones that are subject to design review, which Houghton doesn't have any areas currently subject to design review. As a result of this project, some of the in doing the reformatting and the organization of that, we recommend that certain design regulations be moved to other areas of the zoning code for ease of the user finding information. Say if you're looking to develop a site, you want to go to one chapter for the parking information. Say, you know, if you're in for a design review and you are looking at the design of a parking lot, well, you want to, rather than going to the design regulations and chapter 105 of the zoning code for the parking requirements, it's helpful to go to one place. And also, so we've done that, and then some of the design regulations are really good planning practice for development. So we've, in some cases, taken the design regulations and put them in other areas of the code or combined them with existing language. So that's kind of just an overview. And I'll go into more specifics. And, well, in your packet, you have the specifics of that. So those are the broad goals of the project, the zoning code project update. So we're basically making recommendations to amend Chapter 5, which is the definitions, Chapter 95, landscaping requirements, Chapter 105, which governs the pedestrian access and parking lot design, Chapter 110, streets, and then miscellaneous chapter. So for Chapter 5, a lot of these, we tried to just focus on the regulations that you would be interested in Houghton and under the jurisdiction of Houghton. So that's why we haven't brought to you the Chapter 92 regulations. For Chapter 5, we've made some created some new definitions to be clear about where people can find out information about a pedestrian-oriented street, which is really a defined term. Pedestrian, or say major pedestrian sidewalks and through block pathways, which those are designated in the design districts. There's specific maps in each design district that show which sidewalks should be pedestrian-oriented, which ones should be through block pathways, and that sort of thing. And then you go to Chapter 92 or 105 for how those are installed, okay, for instance. In Chapter 95, there's no recommended changes to the landscape buffer standards, which apply citywide. And what is being, so the changes that we're recommending are for the internal parking lot landscape standard. In the design regulations, it's been a per square foot basis per parking stall. So say 80, you know, I can't remember what the per square foot that we have in here, but it's a certain square footage of landscaping per each stall, okay, or more than 8 stalls. So that allows, so we're recommending the existing language is that there's one parking island per every 8 stalls. That's the current standard. So it's not that big of a change. It allows for more flexibility in the design of a parking area, so it's not rigid, one parking island per 8 stalls, you know. And so that's one change. Then also for the perimeter parking buffer option, currently citywide there's a minimum of a 5-foot wide landscape buffer required. All that were in the design regulations in the design zone subject to design review, they were also you had a choice of a 5-foot wide landscape buffer or a low growing hedge or a wall. Well, we're suggesting that be a feature citywide, okay, that they have a choice of doing a landscape buffer or providing a low growing wall, okay, or not a low, well, a hedge or a low wall.
And this is only for new development.
Yes. In chapter 105, so a lot of these changes, I think, as staff, we believe are positive changes, and they're improvements for the better. And
did these come from examples of where it had been used in other cities successfully, or what initiated all this?
What initiated this was that we felt that the design regulations chapter was becoming very cumbersome, because as we added new design districts to them, and some of them had their unique design regulations, it's gotten very cumbersome.
Okay.
With how to use this chapter. Okay, so in doing that, we said, well, you know, let's kind of dissect this, you know, and take some of these regulations that we think are good practices that they have proven successful in the business, in some of the business districts,
okay,
subject to design review, that let's apply them citywide. And a good example are the requirements for pedestrian access. Now, the existing language in Chapter 105 requires pedestrian access, and in your chart, in 105.18 in that chart, you can tell by the existing language that is not underlined, and the new language is underlined. So already we had some language in there about requiring pedestrian access from the street to the building entrance, but what we are adding here, and most of these things are from the design regulations chapter, so citywide requiring buildings on the same subject property to be connected by pedestrian walkways, and here's the standard that they need to apply, or pedestrian overhead awnings, okay, and also pedestrian access through blocks, through block connections. There, we found that in Chapter 110, there was requirements, or there are requirements for public walkways. We are recommending taking those out of 110 and putting in 105, and combining some of the existing. We found similar language in other sections of the zoning code, and so we are recommending combining that.
Does the current design regulations chapter apply to Houghton?
No.
So effectively, you're taking that chapter and parsing out through all the different sections of the code?
Some of the standards, yes.
So we would be adopting design standards if we accept this?
Well, not really. These are really more pedestrian connection standards. The design sections that we're talking about deal with architectural scale and character and building modulation. Those don't apply. We're really talking about some on-the-ground site planning type of standard.
Right.
So it's a little, we're trying to be more efficient with the design regulations in the design districts, but the ones we're talking about here only deal with those fairly, I guess, general site standards for landscaping connections and walkways, not the architectural scale and design standards that apply in the design districts.
But it's still a change in the standards.
It is, yeah. Well, it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. So to try to promote pedestrian connections and pedestrian activity. So, yeah, that's true.
Can I ask an application question? Just because I'm having a hard time getting my head around one of these things. You talk about the 5-foot buffer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about 68th, 70th Street mm-hmm. and the Houghton Market
mm-hmm.
Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that
mm-hmm.
that strip. So right now there's like that 5-foot buffer between the sidewalk and mm-hmm. then the parking lot where you would park for the grocery store
yes.
and the bank. Now, is this adding this low hedge or wall, is that saying that if they were to redevelop that entire area and if this was happening in Houghton, that they could move that parking lot clear out to the sidewalk but just put a low wall?
Well, let's look at the standards, okay? They would have a choice of these two standards. So let's look at Chapter 95. On page, let's look at page, let's see, I think that's on page 9.
If you look at 10 and 11, it has two drawings.
So look at page 9, and it says buffering, and this is perimeter buffering, and this relates to parking areas. So the parking area and driveways, you would have a choice of a 5-foot wide landscape strip planted as follows, or as an alternative, a hedge or wall.
But the hedge or wall only needs to be 6 inches wide, so
mm-hmm.
there would be 4.5 less feet
yeah.
of impervious surface and
that
use
may,
of the property.
That may
and
be
people,
able to.
And people walking on the
may
sidewalk,
be able to do that.
There would be, like walking on the sidewalk, then there would be a wall right there,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there could be a car right
mm-hmm,
in that wall.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they also have wheel stops that are required in parking areas.
Okay.
And do we know in this particular instant how close the back of the sidewalk is to the property line? Because the back of the sidewalk is not always the property line. These standards are from the property line.
Yeah.
So there might be some right of way left
just
over.
Depends.
Well, there might be, but if you look at 108th Street with those people that built that stone wall right next to the sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it seems like you can.
So we have to assume the sidewalk.
Yeah, so it
yeah.
it looks like that could be possible.
On here.
Mm-hmm.
And why would that be better? Why would that be an improvement? I mean, is that an improvement on?
It allows a choice.
A choice.
Of different development standards.
So we think they both accomplish the same thing in different ways, though. You know, whether it's a landscaping or a wall, they still provide a buffer between the two types of uses.
It's providing a buffer. I think my issue is I really don't like having walls right next to sidewalks because it just gives the person walking on the sidewalk no place to go but out in the street if there's, you know, if there's a conflict going on the sidewalk as far as...
And I don't like the reduction of the pervious surface.
Well,
yeah.
There won't be any reduction of a pervious surface. They still have to meet the lot coverage standards.
Okay.
Well, does that mean they have to put a buffer somewhere else?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Does that mean they would have to put a buffer somewhere else?
They'd have to make up for it someplace else, whether it's a buffer or not. It'd still be pervious surface they'd have to compensate that for, yes.
Or landscaping.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's given in terms of a percentage for the overall lot. So
right.
it's got to come from something.
So what's the current regulation?
5-foot wide.
Five-foot buffer. So this just adds an alternative.
Buffer.
Yeah.
So that's just one example. If I can move on here.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, in 105, we're recommending more pedestrian connectivity and access, okay, be required. We've added bicycle parking requirements, added limitations on the number, or added authority for the city to limit the number of driveways along property frontage to minimize turning complex and congestion along streets. And also, in some of the design districts, parking lot location, we've moved them from the design regulations into the parking chapter. Okay. Now, those would just, this particular issue, limiting the amount of parking along a property frontage just would apply to certain design districts. Okay. So, and also, here's a new regulation. When we updated the Northeast 85th Street zoning regulations this last year, one of the goals there along the corridor is to, in certain areas, not allow drive-throughs. And we created some criteria, design criteria and functionability of drive-throughs, and when we established some criteria for approving drive-through facilities. And those were just applicable in the Rose Hill Business District. Well, now we're recommending that they apply citywide. And those are in Chapter 105 as well. Let's see. And then we made some changes to 110 that are really applicable to the design districts. In 115, we added screening requirements that were in Chapter 92, and we added those to 115 for garbage and recycling receptacles, having those be screened, and also loading and surface areas. So that would be a new requirement citywide, that loading and service areas be located so they're not visible from the street pedestrian or a pedestrian walkway.
Can I just ask you a question?
Yes.
Assuming that the shopping center where the Houghton Market is now was torn down and rebuilt or whatever, right now the loading area is the alley that runs from 106 down to or up to 108th, and the dumpsters and all those things back there are quite prominent if you're walking past that alleyway. What would this do? How would that be functional? I mean, how are they going to not have it in an alleyway?
Well, it could be that that's the best location rather than, say, along the street like 68th, and if they have a choice along 68th and 100 and 108th.
What?
Those are heavily pedestrian areas. It could be that the alley is the best location.
The way that reads, it says visible from a street or a pedestrian. Well, if you're walking down 106th, you can definitely see that alley and all the
garbage
cans and stuff at the back. And if you're walking down 108th, you can definitely see that alley and all of that. The way this reads to me is you're not going to be able to see it from a street or if you're a pedestrian. Anybody see what I'm saying?
We still would allow the alley to have access to be able to get to the loading areas and to the trash area. So I mean, that's, you still have that street curb cut to get there. And I think if it's minimal visibility, it wouldn't be too much of a concern. But like Janice was talking about, if it's along a major street or along a major pedestrian walkway, then it should be screened from view, which I doubt they'll do because site constraints would probably put it where it is now, given that the configuration of that shopping center.
But how could you screen that? I mean, that sounds like maybe, would that be pretty onerous for the property owner to have to come up
well,
with some sort of?
Let's look at the proposed language.
Okay.
In 115. And that is, where is that? Is that
it's the very last page.
The last page. So, do you want to look at the loading areas and service? Is that your question, the loading and service areas, or the garbage?
Well, a combination. I mean, everything's in the alley.
Does the garbage section there apply to residential?
Not single family.
Not single family. How can you tell that?
Exemptions, garbage receptacles for detached dwelling units, duplexes, mortgage facilities, parks.
That's the current regulation now. You see that, Bill? Yeah, okay.
So in other words, is the way it is right now, it'll just stay that way unless the whole complex is torn down and rebuilt. Is that what I get?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to figure out here.
Okay.
So you also note that under 1D it says she'll be located to minimize visibility from any street, pedestrian walkway, or public park. So it could be some visibility, but the idea is to minimize the impact.
Okay. Yeah, but minimize is wide open. It's in the eye of the beholder.
Well, I would guess with how that would be treated is that when you're looking at site layout and you would look at a priority for the pedestrian areas, and it could be that the alley maybe is the lowest priority for pedestrian there. It's not that many pedestrian people walking along the alley, so maybe that's the only place that it can be located, the service area.
But even if
and
it's
loading.
Placed there, this number two screening says that all garbage and recycling receptacles must be screened from view from the street and from adjacent properties.
Yes, that's existing language. That's existing language. We require that dumpsters be screened. That's existing language.
Right, that's okay. Not changing.
That's not changing.
Okay.
What is new is the location of loading and service areas.
You're right. It's not enforced.
Okay. So number two is just not enforced.
Yeah.
Well,
number two. Oh, the loading and service areas?
No, on the garbage.
Oh, number two?
I think the issue on that is many of the structures that get built get torn up and are in disrepair. That's, I think, the main issue. Because once the garbage truck rips the wall down, they just don't get put back up.
Especially older facilities. I think the more newer facilities, mm-hmm. they want to maintain their value and property.
They're built out of concrete block or that sort of thing.
Yeah. I don't know if we had that requirement when the Houghton Shopping Center was built. I don't know.
Well, it's such a narrow little alleyway, I think.
Yeah. But Paul's right. I mean, you tend to see them now they're enclosed with more brick or concrete.
Actually, I think John said that.
Oh, okay. So that's just the overview of the changes. And now we'd like you to open up the public hearing and see if there's any comments on that. And then the goal would be to have your discussion and your recommendation to the Planning Commission, because we haven't been to the Planning Commission yet for a study session. We'll be doing that April 10th, and followed by Planning Commission will have a public hearing on these changes in May, I believe.
Janice, I want to just make sure that I understand. None of these affect residential, right?
Single family residential?
Right.
I don't know if I can answer that definitively, but...
Yeah, for the most part, that's true, I would say.
For the most part, that's true, yeah.
Our design districts are all our business districts, and they...
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't...
Commercial office mixed-use type thing.
Thank you, Janice.
Okay.
With that, we will open up the public hearing portion of this presentation. Would any members of the audience care to comment on these proposed zoning code amendments? Going once.
Can't everybody run up at once?
Going twice. Okay. I guess it's up to us, gang. So, do we have any things that we want to comment on for the Planning Commission on this? Let's start out, John.
A couple of questions, actually, starting with the landscaping in the parking strips. The 25 square feet per stall, have you by chance done an analysis on how that really relates to the amount of the peninsula per eight stall? I think it's per eight stalls that it's currently now. It seems to me that's going to be a little bit more square footage. Was that the intent?
I have not done a real detailed breakdown of that.
Okay.
But
yeah, for what it's worth, pro con, my knee jerk is that's a little bit more square footage than current.
I would think probably so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the second item that I had on that, and even your plates on page 8 depict it, the peninsulas at the end of the parking stalls.
Yes.
I didn't really see, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I really didn't see a minimum width that they need to be. Because the challenges that I see in using parking lots today is that people walk through them. Mm-hmm. The plants never get an opportunity to take root. The dirt gets trampled down and compacted. It's no longer oxygenated, and no matter what you do it, nothing will grow.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought would be we're after area and landscape as a visual breakup of a sea of asphalt. Having less islands but have them larger would be better than more islands that are smaller if we're dealing with the same square footage. It'll give the plants a much better opportunity to grow. It will give people an opportunity either berm them up or reduce them below the grade of the adjacent parking lot and use them as an infiltration device, which is always better.
Mm-hmm.
But you need a larger area to do that, and you need to have something in the code that promotes that low-impact type development. And the way the code is written right now does not really do that.
Yeah, I might comment on that part. Yeah, very, very good observation. In fact, we are in the process of looking at our regulations to determine how we can incorporate some low-impact development techniques and strategies, and that's one that we're taking a serious look at. We've been working with some consulting firms, and we got a team that's looking at this. So that should be coming to you. I'll maybe talk about that in the work program sometime this year. Back to these island widths, do you have a recommendation on what you might be a minimum for the peninsula part of it, or have you seen things that might work in terms of at least an initial general standard?
I don't honestly think that I do, Paul. I think a landscape architect would be better there. However, the more successful locations that I've seen are the ones that promote the thistle-type bushes in the landscape strip, so they're painful to walk through.
Barber.
Seriously?
Barber.
And then the other item is that to make sure that the irrigation system is working and monitored so the plants, so that at least their first growing season can get established. If we start putting requirements on large mature plants, it's really the root structure that's important, not the size of the plant, getting the root structure established. So.
Good observation.
Good observation.
Anybody want to follow that?
Well, I'm going to go back to the wall butting up against sidewalks, because I'm starting to see more and more and more of that, and I'm feeling like Kirkland is becoming more and more a city of walls. I'm seeing lots of walls, lots of fences, and I really don't, especially when children are around, I don't like walking on sidewalks where there is a wall there, and if a car were to swerve or anywhere, there is no place to escape. There is no place for the child to go. Or kids are always pushing each other on 108th Street, or, on 108th and on 68th, the Lakeview kids, they're always pushing each other and just jostling around, having a good time, but that I like that they can fall over into the bushes or something like that. And so I would like the Planning Commission to take that into consideration. And perhaps what we might want to do is say, okay, then there's a 2-foot landscape buffer, and then there's the low wall or the low hedge, but there is a little bit of room to jump out of the way or to move aside if a baby carriage or someone in a wheelchair is coming through on that sidewalk. So I don't want to have all these sidewalks. Plus, you're just going to get a whole lot of pop cans on top of the and more places for graffiti, you know. It's just...
What's your experience been in other places where you've had that option, Paul? Have you had those problems?
We allow it in the the design districts. So that's Juanita Business District, downtown. And Totem Lake, although we haven't had much new development in Totem Lake.
But where have we... Are we seeing that any place that we could look at it, that low wall thing?
We can check on that and see if there's some examples. I can't think off the top of my head.
I mean, the picture is beautiful. I was totally sold on the picture, and then I started thinking about the application, and I was going, boy, I can see pretty soon Kirkland's just going to be these, there's just going to be walls.
I think a decorative wall could be very nicely done, depends on how it's done, but also, and I'm sensitive to the side of the safety zone you're talking about, but I think if you put a 2-foot landscape or area there, that would become very trash filled as well, or not very well maintained. So
right.
Yeah. So I don't like the wall option at all. I don't think that a 3-foot wall is any substitute for trees and plantings and the separation. I hadn't thought of the safety, but people are going to climb back and forth over them. It changes the visual look of walking down the street. You know, it doesn't provide shade. It doesn't provide for birds or somewhere to step off. But also, it's there's no. I didn't see any requirement that if I have my property and I put in a wall, but then Elsie has the adjacent property and she goes with the landscape buffer, and then you go with, and then Rick goes with the landscape buffer, and then Betsy goes with a wall. You know, there was no contiguous requirement or agreement, you know, and it just, looking forward, could be very piecemeal and chopped
like
up.
Like the sidewalks that stop. And
yeah. And it was, so I don't like the wall at all.
I don't like the wall.
Is there still a requirement with the wall to have the street trees?
Street trees and the sidewalk, yes.
They're still required with the wall.
Yes.
Where are they placed?
Where?
So this is within private property,
yeah,
not along the right of way.
Well, it is. You could have a parking lot right
up. Okay.
Well, either way.
So along the right of way, is there still the street tree requirement?
Yes.
Yeah. So this example, this
is not
photograph.
Okay.
If it's along the right of way, we still have the street trees at the 30.
Then the sidewalk and then the wall.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So let's look at the example of 68th Street. If Houghton Market area were to redevelop, so you're saying that if that were to redevelop, then they would have to put in between the street and the sidewalk, there would then become a buffer with street trees and then a sidewalk, and then there could be a wall.
Yeah, it depends on the classification of the street, but we haven't done the design standards for that area either. So it's a zone BC, so they still have a requirement for street trees along the front. But we have to look at that.
In the right-of-way.
What we're talking about is, you know, each street is has its own classification and standard. And some streets require the curb and then the landscape strip with the street trees, and then sidewalk, and then private property. And some streets are designated with, say, a 10-foot wide sidewalk with trees and tree grates.
More of an urban
like
type of street scape.
So I'm not sure what 68th Probably Street arterial. Or 108th, how what that standard yeah. would be.
Because right now, you know, the sidewalk is just right on the street. Mm-hmm. So there's no buffer. There's, yeah. you know, if there's any street trees, they're like stuck in the sidewalk or something. But really, so, okay. I'm not a fan of the wall. Okay, so that's just,
okay.
I guess that's my two cents. Is
we have a concern with the wall.
We have a concern with the wall.
I've been taking notes.
Some examples, yeah.
Now, you didn't talk about this in your overview, mm-hmm. but some of the... Could you just... I had a little bit of trouble understanding this, and it was late at night, and so I said, I'll just let Janice explain this to me. On the... in Chapter 105, mm-hmm. on page 10, number 2, the pedestrian walkways, we're talking about some of these overhangs.
Right.
So a number D and E, I would, 2D and E, could you just maybe demonstrate what you mean by those?
2D and E, let me find the section first. So this is the overhead weather protection.
Let's see.
What page?
Page 10. It's
Chapter
105,
19.
Number 2, D and E.
Oh, yeah, I
D, the overhead weather protection. Those are the standards?
No.
What section are you looking at?
105.19, page 10 of chapter 105.
Yeah.
105.19, 2, D, and E.
Yeah.
Height of solid fences.
Oh, 2, D, and E, okay.
19. I guess it isn't the overhang, never mind. It's just the fence, okay.
Now, these just pertain to businesses, right?
The public pedestrian walkways?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is, again, about the fences. But I'm rereading
that's,
this.
Okay. That's actually an existing standard in 110.
So you're moving
it. What we did is moved it to 105.
Okay. So they can be four feet tall.
And this is the height of the solid wall. It's limited to 42 inches in height. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this isn't anything new. It was just moved.
It was just moved.
Okay, that's what was underlined. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So that these standards are for like a through block connection, requiring a pedestrian connection through private property to connect with, a pedestrian walkway, pathway through a neighborhood.
Well, as long as it's not new, I'm okay. And the way I read this, as far as all sidewalks in front of buildings will now have overhead rain protection, right? Is that what?
Which section are you looking at?
Oh, that's just what I was getting out of reading these.
Oh, I saw that one. You go to the chart. The way this chapter works is you go to the chart. In 105.18, and that really tells you where this requirement, when it's required, well, and the uses, the X's show the uses when it's required,
right.
And the requirements say where and under what circumstances, right. And then you go to the section 105. Or you go to 2 underneath the chart, and those are the standards for the different, depending on if you're talking about on-site pedestrian walkways, through block pathways, overhead weather protection.
Right, okay.
So let me look, get my bearings here.
So except for single family...
So
like
we currently require the overhead weather protection along any portion of the building which is adjacent to a pedestrian walkway. Okay, now what's underlined is we're adding
exterior entrances to all buildings, and then you have the specific design district requirements.
Okay.
And then you go to the standards on page for how they should be installed. And page...
You made it easier.
On page 10.
I said, I'm glad you made it easier.
Oh, I know. I know. But at least, you know... I know. It's...
Okay.
Mina, we're doing our best here.
Okay, it must be at least...
It's a good idea.
Must be at least... Okay.
So, maybe composed of awnings, marquees, must be at least 5 feet in width, must be at least 8 feet above the ground, and if it's part of design review, we'll review that at that time.
Okay.
So, does that help?
Yeah, so it sounds like all new buildings have to have overhead weather protection. Yeah.
Except industrial and single family.
Yes.
Okay.
Except for single family.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I was clear on that. Mm-hmm. I think that's all mine.
Anyone else have any questions or comments?
I do have one.
Okay, Elsie.
Page 6 of chapter 110, down at the next to the last paragraph, replacement of damaged or substandard or existing street improvements. Now, I realize this supposedly property owners, whether you are own a business or own a home, you're supposed to do that. Does this, is this just for the businesses in this place?
No, that's existing language.
That, I know it's existing.
That looks like it would apply to any use.
Right.
It's any use.
Excuse me?
It's any use.
Any use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure.
John?
You discussed in Chapter 105 limiting driveways.
Yes.
You went over that pretty briefly, and I was having a difficult time discerning the differences. Could you walk quickly through those channels?
Let me go to that section. Okay, you're looking at Chapter 105, page 13. That's something that we inserted because oftentimes it sets the authority, establishes the authority for the Public Works Department to limit the number of driveways along properties. And oftentimes that's necessary to improve the circulation. And
in terms of different than what's happening now?
Right.
Are there...
It's new language.
Is just completely new language, and
the Public Works Department has a policy to try and work with property owners in doing that. I'm not aware of any existing language that has that, and it was suggested by the Public Works Department that we include something like that, some language like that.
And
specifically where it talks about parking areas.
Okay, thank you.
Betsy?
I have one other. So this would allow drive-through facilities, like drive-through restaurants, in areas where they're not currently allowed?
It establishes the where a specific use zone, a specific use or zone, in the use zone charts, the regulations for a particular use in a zone, if drive-through facilities are not permitted, it will say so.
Okay. So this won't allow them where they haven't.
This is okay. This is establishing criteria for how they should be designed and the things that we look for in approving them.
Okay. So that's good. That's all I wanted to know.
It says that the public works officials determines the sufficient driveway throat length is provided. What is that? I know what it is. What is sufficient length in terms of a number?
I don't know the answer to that. That's probably has to do with how wide the property is and how many cars that can be backed up. You know, I don't have the answer to that one. Do you?
I think it depends on the situation. I don't know if there's a standard number. Obviously, you don't want people backing onto the street or into other people's properties to queue up to get through it. So we can check on that and find out if there's actually a specific standard that might be applicable.
Yeah, there might be a standard.
Because that seems vague and open to interpretation.
Okay.
Well, for a reason, you know, because it really depends on working with the site, working with the applicant, trying to figure out the best solution that, you know, makes sure it works for everybody. But we can find that out.
So define, or I can find out what the standard is for that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there is already an architectural standard or something for that, a proportion or something.
I'm sure the drive-through industry has a number of, you know, standards, but
yeah. Maybe ITE. So
maybe ITE might. Yeah.
Or speeding
in the drive-through.
Anything else?
I have a question about the bicycle parking. It's pretty broad, and it doesn't specify like how many parking spots there should be, like you do in most parking situations. So what's the idea there? Is it just
like
to get
how many bicycle racks?
Yeah. I'm not suggesting that you do, but what's the thought on bicycle racks, bicycle parking?
The standard? You know, I don't have the answer to that either. There are, like, how many bicycle racks per... You know, typically the way we administer these is, and how we've been doing this in the downtown is, it's could be up to 1 to 2 per development. So usually one out on the sidewalk by the retail use or covered parking in a garage. So that's something that I can look up, I suppose.
Yeah.
How many bikes per square feet or people? Or
I don't think it's been much of a problem. People want to incorporate those because a lot of people, you know, use bikes these days, and it certainly reduces parking.
And it keeps people from locking their bike up right at the door.
That's true. That's
a
good
facility.
Point. That's a good point.
And that's the big issue. It tells them where to lock your bike up.
Yeah.
Over there at the bike rack. Yeah.
Right.
And I'm not suggesting that you, you know, put that in there.
Right. Okay.
I think less is more in this case. Just curious.
It's usually just like one, sometimes two. And like I said, in the downtown, I'm thinking of.
I would think we would want to encourage bicycle riding.
But there also is only so much room on the long sidewalk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anything else? The only thing I would request is that when it comes back to us,
mm-hmm.
please be sure that it's real clear which of this are new regulations and which is just it's being moved from a different place, but it's already applicable. So that,
yes.
You know, that's really important. It makes it so much easier for us to
yes,
understand and analyze.
And
the
good point. I will do that for the Planning Commission.
Yeah.
And so you'll get a copy of that packet. And what I hope to do there is, like, put numbers by the key things that are new. And
mm-hmm. That would be helpful.
And there's something that is being changed that regards residential. Will you highlight that?
Residential?
Single family?
Single family.
Okay.
Because there were a couple places in here I had to reread over and over because I wasn't sure whether what I was reading,
mm-hmm.
but I figured it out.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, when we first started this, we thought, oh, what a great idea. We'll make it simpler, easier, consolidate everything, and the more we got into it, what the heck?
I know.
It's complicated.
I think in the end it might be better, but
yeah.
We're still
I agree. It's been a challenge.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you for
your
comments.
Thank you for your hard work and for
thank you
patiently leading us through that.
All right.
Okay. Work program review. Paul?
Well, yes, thank you. I kind of want to refer you to at least a color chart here, and as you might have read, this is our annual work program for the planning department. It kind of identifies the major projects and tasks and schedule for what we call the long-range planning side of the department. And we have identified about 13 general topics with subtasks with each one of those, and then we have actually two categories. The first page of that chart kind of shows those items that, you know, go before the Planning Commission and you for the most part and City Council. Well, the second page really is more administrative. It doesn't typically involve you or the Planning Commission, but, you know, it's items of interest typically. And I wanted to kind of run through a couple of these because I think they'll be of interest to the Community Council and get maybe answer some questions or clarify some issues there, and to give you a sense of what our key priorities are. This actually went to the Planning Commission last year at a retreat, and then we took that to the City Council at a joint meeting in February, and now we're coming back to them in a month or so with final adoption. So it's still in kind of draft form, although for the most part we've identified primarily the major tasks and schedule, but there's still a couple things in play here. And this is kind of a general schedule too, and it kind of ranks the issues for 2007, although we want to look long term and out a couple of years, so it kind of also identifies those things that may go into 2008, 2009. But just to kind of run down some of the key ones there, and I just noted those in the memo as well. For example, the comp plan, we do that every year. We've got an amendment process we'll be starting up in a month or so. The primary change might be in our level of service standard for transportation. The Transportation Commission is working on that now, and with the idea of coming back with maybe more of a multimodal approach to our level of service standard for transportation. We've talked about that many times before. It's a challenge to do that because how do you measure transit use and bicycle and pedestrian activity and still fold it into a concurrency system, which is currently based on peak hour trips in at our intersections. So more on that to come, and you'll be seeing that when that moves forward. We do have what's called private amendment requests. These are opportunities for anybody to submit a request for a zone change or a comprehensive plan change, usually both at the same time. And we do that every 2 years. We have five this year from individuals. One happens to be within your jurisdiction along 116th. On the west side of the road, south of 68th and 70th there. And it's south of that office building the office building is right across the park and ride, and then go further south there on the west side of the road is a proposal to change that to either multifamily or office or perhaps mini stories. At least that's the initial request from the applicant. So what happens with these private amendment requests, we go through what's called a threshold review process, and that goes before the Planning Commission, and they make a recommendation to the City Council which ones we want to study for the coming year. So we received the applications late last year, and we'll be taking that before the Planning Commission probably in about a month or two, and then before the City Council, then to select which ones they want to go forward with. So, and if that does go forward, you'll be involved in the review of that and make a recommendation on any zone change or comp plan change to the Planning Commission. Then, of course, you'll have final jurisdiction to review that at the end. The neighborhood plans, always a major topic for us in terms of our work program, and we're still wrapping up the Market and Norcrook neighborhood plan implementation with our regulations, and once we get done with that, we are intending to begin the process to update the neighborhood plans for the Central Houghton neighborhood and for the Lakeview neighborhood. We talked to the Planning Commission and to some degree with the City Council. A couple things came up in terms of how we process that, those neighborhood plans. We're trying to get away from a three-year process, so hopefully we can be more expeditious in trying to do this, but we say that every time, and it always turns out to be 2 or 3 years to go through the neighborhood planning process. But maybe there's ways we can improve on that. we probably will want to convene some sort of citizens advisory committee or a group that would provide some input to you and to the Planning Commission as we go through the neighborhood plans. We have to figure out what your role is in terms of that committee, or if you want to be part of that or want to stay away from that and let them, you know, go forward with their work. We certainly want to be with you the whole time and bringing, you know, forward concepts, ideas, drafts, whatever, and working with the community council as we go through the neighborhood plan process. Another idea is to maybe do one at a time. Therefore, you can really focus on that, get through it, you know, deal with one neighborhood association, move forward, and then go to the next one. And so that's another idea that's kind of surfaced. There's pros and cons to either way. I mean, obviously, you can focus and be more specific on one neighborhood at a time. On the other hand, there's some efficient ways to kind of do both at the same time, since it involves the community council as well. So once we kind of are able to free up some staff to be able to put together a work program on how we want to approach these and get some direction from the city council, we'll come back to you and start talking to you about how to lay these out and get your input on that as well.
Do you know what staff will be assigned to it?
You know, we don't. And I'll get to that in a second. Really, I can tell you right now, it depends on annexation. You know, that's the last item on the work program. And the council's meeting tomorrow night, and we think they'll give us a sense of direction tomorrow night on where we're going with annexation. So if they do it, then we're going to have to kind of maybe play around with who's doing what. And that might change a lot of things right now with the work program. So we originally talked about, Joan has been our neighborhood planner for several years. She says she's willing to do that. We're like a change, so, you know, at some point you want to rotate people around, but we're still kind of looking at who the staff would be for a number of different topics. Number four, design regs. You just heard that, so I won't talk about that very much. We're trying to finish that project up as well as the Market Street corridor, which is part of the neighborhood plan process that came out of that last year. And then task number five, you've seen these before, miscellaneous code amendments. We have another bundle of amendments we'll be considering sometime this year. We're trying to free up staff to get going on that. Probably the person that's going to be doing that, which has taken Mike Berksman's place, would be somebody you're familiar with, Laurie Anderson. So she's still around, and she's been doing permit review and is ready for a change as well. So she's willing to take this on, and once we get into it, we'll come back before you again and start working through that. Number six was the kind of title for the FAR issue, the single family standards, and we had that as a work program because when we had the retreat with the Planning Commission and then subsequently with the Council adopting new regulations, there was an interest in perhaps thinking that we hadn't done everything we could at this point. So they wanted to maybe revisit that this year. I think they're kind of, since they just adopted the new ones a couple months ago, they're kind of rethinking that and thinking, let's give this some time to see how they work, and then maybe come back to that next year. So at this point, we're probably intending to drop that off the work program and give it some breathing space and see if the regulations they did adopt actually will accomplish what they think they will. So that will come off, and then probably the next round before the city council. Housing, number seven, is a real priority topic for the city at this point. The council had the retreat last weekend, and they spent all afternoon Friday talking about housing, particularly affordable housing. We have a number of subtasks to look at there. We are just now finishing up the evaluation of the innovative housing regulations. Those deal with the cottages, the small lot, the compact housing type of arrangement, and we'll be shortly coming back before you and the Planning Commission with some regulations that would apply citywide to encourage that. And then affordable housing, it's again, we're kind of waiting for the council direction on that. We do have right now regulations and incentives to encourage bonus densities for affordable housing. but no one's taken advantage of that. So we're looking at other ways to encourage the provision of affordable housing, and primarily, probably mostly in our multifamily zones. It's going to be very difficult to do that in single family areas, but something we can still look at. But for the most part, it really will apply to our multifamily zones. And in fact, at the council retreat, a couple things that they mentioned that they're really interested in looking to do more of is the acquisition of properties, for example, or the preservation of affordable housing. One thing that still, I think, is a very successful story is something Rick was involved with that they still talk about, with the preservation of Plum Court. And one of the most successful programs that the city has seen in terms of preserving existing housing stock for housing supply. So they want to move more into that and try to inventory properties, see what's out there, talk with property owners, and see if there's more opportunities for that type of endeavor. So stay tuned for that one. And the other one that's on the list here they expressed a real interest in is perhaps affordable housing opportunities at the city's park and ride lots. We have three park and ride lots that may be eligible: Kingsgate, the Houghton, and the South Kirkland. Probably the most feasible one would be the South Kirkland park and ride. The other two are owned by the Department of Transportation, and they're difficult to deal with on these issues. The one in South Kirkland is owned by King County Metro, who has an active program to encourage mixed use of housing opportunities and transit oriented development at park and ride. So that's something that if it does go forward, we want to be talking to you about and see if there's some opportunities there to provide some affordable housing down south. And then number nine, natural resources, a number of tasks that we're working on currently. We have a team of public works, planning, and parks that coordinate all the environmental stewardship activities throughout the city, and we're doing more in that area all the time. Pretty soon we'll have a website so you can have a resource to look at on what's happening throughout the city. Some of you may be involved with the ivy poles, for example, and that's an area where we're trying to encourage more volunteer activities within our natural areas and our parks. The Shoreline Master Program, we already briefed you on that. We'll be coming back probably in about 3 or 4 months with some preliminary goals and policies and some maybe some draft regulations to move forward on that issue. And that'll be tied in with our critical areas regulations as we need to update those as part of that overall effort dealing with our sensitive areas, wetlands and streams, for example. So we're just starting to get into that. We really don't have much to report on yet, but that'll be coming forward. And then nothing this year on tree and landscaping regulations, but in 2008 we expect to come back with a revisit of those regulations, and again that'll be before you probably starting at the end of this year and then moving into the first quarter of 2008. And the last bullet point there is something John mentioned, is low impact development, and something we're all interested in doing and trying to see more of and trying to provide ways to incorporate that. And we're seeing some developers that have a real interest in that. For example, the innovative housing projects, the Cam West project and the Cottage Company, both incorporated LID into their developments, and I think have been very successful in doing that and using alternative ways to deal with stormwater. So with something we're trying to look at our codes and regulations to promote that, trying to encourage that, or some incentives or some ways to trade off certain things if we can, or how do we incorporate into our streets and roads and parks and our own projects as well. So stay tuned for that one, and we'll be coming back to you later on that. And then on the next page, those are kind of a list of kind of special projects that are going on. There's a downtown strategic plan update that's in the works. We're still doing some work on 85th Street with the improvements to the corridor. We do have an economic development manager who's putting together a work program for economic development. That CTR, concurrency impact fees, is a catch-all for a number of things. There is an active effort right now to update our impact fee standards and fees. And then we're getting down to a final design for the downtown transit center. So those are going forward. And then we have an ongoing effort to have a our mapping and database inventoried and kept up to date. And then we work with regional agencies such as the Puget Sound Regional Council, Suburban Cities Association, Eastside Transportation Partnership, and so forth. And like I said, the last biggie is annexation. So we think probably the council will, and I'm just guessing here, but probably give the go-ahead to go to the next phase, and that is to start to work on the potential vote for annexation to occur sometime in probably 2008, later 2008, and we would have to do some work up front to try to determine the appropriate zoning and regulations that would apply within our annexation area if they do go forward with the vote. So we'd have probably at least a full-time staff person devoted to that. And like I mentioned earlier, we're still trying to figure out who that would be. So.
And what is the potential annexation area?
What is it? It's the area that includes the Kingsgate, the what was called the North Juanita area, and Finn Hill. It's about 35,000 people. It's three kind of somewhat distinct neighborhoods. And it's a major effort that's going to affect all departments if we go forward.
Did I see someplace that we were going to get to vote on this?
The residents of the annexation area get to vote on it. The residents of Kirkland do not get to vote on it. That's by state law.
Unless you move.
They've been doing kind of a some active, you know, listening, going out to the communities, both within Kirkland itself and out to the annexation area, trying to gauge interest and trying to inform people what this means. I have not been involved directly, Eric has. So, and the biggest concern was financial as well, you know, because for a long time it looked like it was going to cost, you know, a couple million per year if we annexed those areas. There is some state funding now that would soften that blow for the next 10 years, and that expires after, if we don't take advantage of it by 2010, it's gone. So that would make up a big part of the difference here. But they're still looking at long-term, both in terms of operating and capital needs. So it's a pretty big decision, but growth management says we should do it. People identify with that area, both from the school district, and it's has the same zip code or postal code as Kirkland. A lot of people live in there, shop in Kirkland. So even though it's going to be a major effort, it's probably, you know, the right thing to do, but you have to solve the fiscal issues as well.
What's the advantage of doing that?
Well, right now it's the unincorporated King County, and the way the growth management legislation is set up, that you should encourage unincorporated areas to be within cities, to their more efficient provision of services and facilities. It's in our fire district, for example, so we already provide fire services up there. We can control the, you know, the fate of the area better than the county can. They do get better law enforcement than the county can provide. You know, it's also, I think, seen as that in the past that we already took the prime areas, the Total Lake, for example, and the commercial areas, and it should be kind of our fair share to absorb the residential area as well. So, but there are pros and cons. I mean, the people have been debating this for a long time, and we'll have to see what the vote says. So that's kind of the overview of the work program.
It's a
lot to do, and a lot of these involve you all. So if you have any questions or clarifications or want some more information on any of these, be happy to provide those.
On the neighborhood plan, Paul, what's the latest that you would expect that we might start on it, assuming worst-case scenario and you're loaded with annexation work and everything else?
The latest? The latest, you mean?
That's what I mean.
You know, it's possible it could be deferred until next year, depending on what happens. But given this setup, if you go forward, we're probably talking about July, August before we could start. You know. And that's just starting to put things together in terms of the work scope and identifying the structure and the schedule and so forth. So
we can make vacation plans for the summer then.
I think so.
Okay.
In the fall, in the winter.
John.
I have a question about this to Rick and to Paul. What is the restrictions, if any, on us as council members to participate in any of these committees or attend any of the meetings, that sort of thing?
Paul, you go ahead.
These are all legislative, so it's really if you can still keep an open mind and a fair mind as you go through the process and not make up your mind early on until you get all the information. But I think with the neighborhood plans, for example, one thing might be to have a couple of community council members as part of the group.
Right.
We want to make sure it works for you all as well. Or you can keep separate, too. I think we need to talk about that and what you think your role is and how best do you think you can participate in that. So.
Unless it's quasi-judicial, there's no prohibition on it, and I think it's a plus to get as much information as you can. And I don't view any of us as being the type of people who would be so close-minded that we're going to just develop a point of view and that's it. We're not going to be open to anything else. I would encourage going to as many of the hearings as possible and anything you're interested in, personally. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
That's it for the work review.
We'll keep you posted.
And then our last item on the agenda is the rescheduling of the May 28th regular meeting to May 21st due to Memorial Day. Does that work for everybody?
Is that a Monday?
Yeah.
Yes.
Monday, May 21st. It's Victoria Day, if anybody's Canadian.
Oh, yeah?
We didn't ask any of our kids.
I guess I should have been asked.
You
so
May 21st, you say?
Yeah, we don't need to take a vote on it. If everybody's okay with it, we'll just do it. Yeah,
I'm fine. I wrote it down.
Does that work? 21st?
Okay. Write it down, kid.
Okay.
It's always the rookie.
May 21st. Okay.
For our meeting on the 23rd, I have to be in St. Louis of April. So I won't be here for that meeting. Right now there's nothing on the agenda, so I was hoping it might cancel.
Well, we don't meet just to meet. We only meet if we have something to meet for, so we'll see.
I move we adjourn this meeting.
And move.
Second.
And seconded. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.